Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Don't tell me not to live, just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cry out to rain on my parade. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Football Ramble. My name's Marcus and Jim Campbell's here.
Hello.
Luke Moore's here.
Wow.
And everyone's favourite Pete Donaldson.
I like how you kind of really concentrated on those lyrics and then went, my name's Football Ramble. Welcome to the Football Ramble.
That was the main bit.
That was the important bit.
Don't have a go.
I'm not having a go, I'm just saying it was very good.
That's Are you like that guy who made a rap album in the Apple Store?
Yeah.
Are you just doing a verse at a time in these and then you're going to cut them all together?
Oh, he's going to put it all together and it'll come
together
like with Brian Wilson-type precision.
Just thought we needed a bit of Liza Minnelli at some point on the ramble, and now we've got it. The new James Bond film is out, and there are rumours it could be Daniel Craig's last appearance as 007. This begs the question, Ramblers, who from the world of football do you think would be a good successor for Mr. Craig? Jim?
Well, personally, We've endorsed the man a lot of late, bigged up his credentials, and I think now is the perfect time for Alan Pardew to sort of have a job share with England and being James Bond.
He'd love that. He'd love that suggestion, Jim.
He would.
Yeah, you can imagine Alan Pardew thinking, yeah, I fancy that.
Yeah, I'm ready.
I can do that. I think he would say, just give me three films.
Yeah. Just give me three movies and three Bond girls a movie.
You know, win, lose or bust.
I mean, obviously, this is directed by Guy Ritchie. Yeah. Otherwise, that makes no sense.
Okay.
Just give me some hair dye and I'm there.
Yeah, it's like Bond girls all under 30. None of your Monica Bellucci's. Yeah. None of that.
I think it's the one, isn't it, Jim?
Well, yeah, I think it's the obvious choice.
Mm. Luke?
I don't know if I can follow that.
I've got
a couple of notes here. I mean, I couldn't let this question go by without mentioning and just imagining for a few seconds, and I think we should all join in, what it would be like if Kevin Keegan was James Bond. I know we talk about Kevin Keegan too much. I know there's
that
too many callbacks
true.
About Kevin Keegan.
Yeah.
But this has to be mentioned in this context.
He'd die in the first scene. On set.
Yeah. Just bash his head.
Okay.
Have a hemorrhage.
We're sending you to this mission. You know, I don't think I've got what it takes.
This message will self-destruct. I'll just pop it in my pocket. Oh, God. Yeah.
The name's Bond, Kevin Bond. No,
yeah, not him. Just to be absolutely clear, Bond, Kevin Bond, that gun is loaded. It is loaded, and there is a safety catch to be used. But I'm not going to go for him, but no. I just thought he had to be mentioned.
Well, fair play.
I think the obvious choice, well, I thought it was the obvious choice until Jim mentioned Alan Pardew, which ticks every box, is Roy Keane.
Oh.
Roy Keane with John.
Not obvious to me.
I think surely he's head henchman.
Head of the FAI, John Delaney, as the Bond villain. Mick McCarthy as M.
Okay.
Doing all the gadgets, but is he...
M's not the gadget. He's the boss, Bond's
boss. Oh, yeah, M. Yeah. Mick McCarthy's boss, of course, yeah. I don't know who would be Q doing the gadgets.
Allardyce on the gadgets. He loves his Prozone.
He does, actually, yeah, but he's not... Yeah, I could see
he's not involved, though, with Roy Keane's career.
No, yeah, true.
Stephen Ireland?
Yes. Now you're talking. Stephen Ireland have all those gadgets in his house anyway.
What I like about modern football is the only two notable women in the male game is Karen Brady and Eva Caniero. That's the only choice you got for Miss Moneypenny.
The FA's Heather Rabat.
Yeah, okay.
She's a female player in the game.
Jackie Oatley.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, in the kind of the very face of male football.
Yeah, true. But the thing with Keane, the reason I've chosen Keane, though, is because there's been a lot of talk recently around, is Bond too anachronistic to be a hero these days to people? Mm. Is he too much of a throwback? Is he essentially a psychopath? Well, Keane's your man. Yeah. Keane is your absolute man.
He's unreconstructed, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. Very much. He's rough around the edges.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's probably... I mean, because
he's
also,
all edge.
Yeah, he is all edge.
Stick it up your bollocks, Hugh.
James...
One hell of a poker face.
Definitely. James Bond is also someone who is turned into recently with Daniel Craig. The sort of the narrative's been a bit around. Oh, is he getting too old now? Mm. He's a sort of old school type spy in a changing world. Very keen, very much fits that.
I know that.
Peter
Tony Yeboah.
Good.
Just because again, it's like Craig turned the slightly more refined Bond into a slightly more brute strength, old school. I'm going to kick this ball as hard as I can, and it's going to go in, and you're going to hurt.
I like you. Basically, thought who's done something brilliant in the world of football? Tony Yeboah. You've gone straight there, and that's fine.
And
you thought therefore he qualifies as Bond.
Well, we've had the cultural football touchstones, the Ramble touchstones that are Keane and Keegan. I think.
I don't think Tony Yeboah would be tempted away from his hotel empire in Ghana.
Yeah,
I think we're ready for an African Bond, guys. All right.
Okay.
Stop holding back the tide of progress.
Fair
all right.
Enough. Fair enough.
Stop hauling back the volleys.
He ambushed you with that one.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I can't argue with that. I genuinely thought you were going to go Tino Asprilla.
He's got guns. We know that.
He's well adept in other areas.
There'll be no secret, kind of tiny wee guns he fits in his shoe. Like an AK.
Just a bazooka.
On a horse.
And 100 Bond girls.
Yeah. Actually, Tony Yeboah would, in that sense, be a good Bond. Sorry, not Tony Yeboah. Tino Asprilla would be a good Bond because he loves attention. And one of the things that fascinates me about Bond is that he's supposed to be a famous spy. He tells everyone he meets what his name is.
Yeah.
He's not even hiding what he does.
The name's spy.
Would be
famous
similar.
Spy.
Well, for me, Bond needs to be smooth. He needs to be sexy. He needs to be comfortable with beautiful women.
Oh, for God.
He needs to be able and willing.
I'm putting his mic down.
Yeah. Hey, come on, that's not fair. People don't need to hear this.
Put it back up. He needs to be able and willing to travel to faraway lands, doing all manner of things.
I mean, he's done his research, to be fair.
And he needs to be able to mix it with the rich and dangerous.
Have you written this down?
One name leaps to mind.
Football, football, I like football.
Luke's got the point.
Thank you very much.
Luke's got the point.
I think Jim deserves him, but I'll take it.
I like how Max didn't actually get his answer out.
Don't need
and
to.
Forever.
Well,
it'll be the unanswered question for Marcus.
But Pete, for Marcus to do that, to not actually mention the name, but every single listener know what he's talking about, means he's won.
Yeah.
That's a victory for him.
He's a psychological terrorist.
You can shove your points up, yeah.
That does not sit right with me.
Right, Premier League time. Liverpool, they got the points, didn't they? Mourinho's in trouble. Oh, he's in hot soapy bubble. Jim.
Yeah, he remains in trouble.
Oh, dear. There's talk of him with just one game left to save his job.
The real winner in all this is Yokohama Tyres.
Why is that?
They're a new sponsor
of Chelsea. They can't believe their luck.
Well, these people are watching them. At least they're not. Yeah. At least they're not strolling to the. They might win something. They might win a cup or something, and it'll be through adversity. Very much like a tyre.
The column inches around Chelsea have been far superior than they would be if they were, say, 4 or 5 points ahead at the top of the table at this stage of the season. Mm. Everyone would just be like, same old Chelsea, rumbling on. They wouldn't get any coverage. The fact that they're down in 15th or wherever they are. I'm just saying, Yokohama Tyres are absolutely loving it because they're getting such a return on their investment.
Yokohama in general.
Yeah.
It's good for the region. I actually think Mourinho deserves some credit because, you know, for a large period of last season and his former reign in charge of Chelsea, he was accused of them being boring. And obviously he's switched the styles and they're now hilariously entertaining.
he should use that as well. You said you wanted more entertainment.
Yeah.
You've seen that defending.
What, don't you like slapstick?
I just think he's doing so much ironic clapping at the moment.
Yeah,
the
referees.
The players are just looking at him because he keeps on making us just smash into each other. That's what's happening with the defence. That's why they can't defend.
I think Mourinho's getting dangerously tall because he's already gone from being sort of incredulous and sort of really angry about things. Mm. I actually think in the post-match after the Liverpool game, he started, well, not in the post-match, before the final whistle, he started to look a bit confused. Mm. And I wonder if that, like, he's running out of weapons. I don't know, I wrote down earlier when I was thinking about this that I wonder if they'll give him a bit of time and just say, look, you know, as long as it's mathematically possible, like the whole David Moyes thing, as long as it's mathematically possible for him to get to fourth, he might stay in there and they might give him a sort of free rein to cull all the players that have been a problem and perhaps bring some new faces in. Because I think I'm right in saying that no team has finished higher than seventh with a start this bad in the history of the Premier League.
Right.
But the way the Premier League looks this season is Chelsea are only 6 points off seventh and they're 10 points off fourth. It's not outrageous to suggest they could do very much better than seventh. Mm. So while that's still going, I wonder if he's going to be going to have a bit more time than people perhaps think.
Yeah, I mean, also the one game to save his job thing was said before the Liverpool game and before a few games earlier than that as well. So, I mean, I think that's just coming from the press, isn't
it? I think the one game, I think it was he had the time between now and the international break. Because if they suddenly thought... Because they did have a meeting. The Chelsea board did have a meeting. Right. Make no mistake about that. After... was it maybe the Southampton game? It was a few weeks ago now.
Okay.
And they sort of said to themselves, what are we going to do here? And it hasn't improved. And there was talk of that they had until now, until the international break. Because if they go on the international break, they've got a couple of weeks to find someone. And there's talk of, could there be an interim manager?
Right.
I mean,
who's Hiddink being linked again?
Well, Hiddink will always be linked there because he was very successful. But I think the fact that there aren't many candidates helps Mourinho out,
frankly. We've said this the past few weeks. I'm not sure we said it on Friday, but we've said it over the past few weeks. It's only half the story about deciding to get rid of the manager or not. It's who you can bring in.
Well, there was a little article in the Telegraph from Northern Ireland in Belfast, I think, suggesting that Brendan Rodgers on interim.
Wow.
He's moved to London.
He's been a coach there.
Yeah.
He's been a coach there.
I can't imagine, because him and Jose Mourinho are very good mates. I can't imagine him taking it. Well, imagine that, though.
There's also talk of Fabio Capello being up.
Well, there is. That came up. Was that today or yesterday?
That would be crazy. I mean, that to me...
Would he know the league?
Yeah, but I respect Capello as a manager who achieved great things and won...
He knows the ruble.
He does.
He's got most of them.
But he is very much a manager who the game has left behind, in my view, and I think that would be a backward step. I don't see that as an option, really. But the interesting thing was, and we were talking a bit about this earlier before we came on, is that there was a BBC journalist gave either a series of tweets or an interview or something saying he spoke to a Chelsea player who wanted to remain anonymous, who said to him that he would never try for Mourinho again. And a lot of people, the worst thing for Chelsea is that it's really, it's impossible to narrow that down. But a lot of people
say Jody Morris still there.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying it's
Winston Bojarda.
A lot of people are saying it's Winston Bojarda.
That about any manager he's ever had at Chelsea.
But a lot of people say it might be Hazard.
Hazard, clearly what Mourinho's done in the first season, he put him on the bench a little bit and said, look, you're fantastic, you need to get with the programme.
Not for the first time as well.
Not for the first time. And then second season, Hazard was magnificent, and it's all gone to pot this season. And he's tried to do what he did with Cristiano Ronaldo at Real Madrid and put him on the bench and say, go on then, prove to me that you want it. Cristiano Ronaldo is the type of player that will go, all right then, I'm going to score 80 goals in the second half when you bring me on. Whereas Hazard apparently is just like, up yours, mate.
And also Hazard was the, if you think about it logically, when they had the issue with the two doctors, and Hazard was obviously the player that went down, the way Mourinho carried on, he implicated Hazard by essentially suggesting that he was feigning injury and he was essentially a cheat. And I don't know the relationship between them, but you could view that and say, actually, Hazard could be put out by that. Say, oh, well, you don't know I was injured or not. You know what I mean? I could have been injured. And you've told people to just stop being naive to try and treat me. So he could have had his nose put out of joint by that as well.
He's still very young, isn't he, I guess?
He is, but the relationship is clearly strained to the point of broken down with Mourinho and a lot of those players. And they busted. Mourinho is the type of manager which other managers used to talk about, say, Brian Clough is a great example. Oh, I'd never go for a drink with him, but I'd walk across a desert for him. That kind of stuff. It's all very well if you've got that going, but if that suddenly fails, then
you've
it's
got
not
nothing left.
Exactly. Yeah. You go from one extreme to the other. It's kind of like, hang on, pal. No way. And it looks, for all, you know, all roads lead to that suggestion, don't they, at Chelsea? Because it is utterly ridiculous.
Yeah, and also the amount of players who just from, you know, the evidence of watching the games look like they're not trying is staggering. That could be Ivanovic, it could be Fabregas, it could be Matic. You could argue it could be Diego Costa, who's been nowhere near the player he was at the start of last season. Fabregas had something like 9 assists by this point last season. He's got 1 this year.
But what was...
Trying.
But the drop-off
really
is too much.
Exactly.
For those players and the whole team. But what I thought was very interesting was when Chelsea went 2-1 down, Mourinho's reaction when he was trying to G up the players, going, come on, and all this. And I thought, you never see him do that.
Yeah.
No. Well, you also never see him go ahead at home and lose.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing is, the worrying thing as well, there's plenty of things to worry about. One of the key worrying points for me watching the game is that when they went 2-1 down, that was it.
Yeah.
The third goal was criminally bad.
Oh, my goodness.
It was so bad.
What struck me as being really interested and sort of an indication of where Mourinho's at mentally was the way he reacted in the post-match interviews when people, you know, basically said, are you aggrieved that Lucas Leiva wasn't sent off? And I think he should have been. Clearly a second yellow, that foul. But Mourinho spoke about it as if Chelsea had been disadvantaged, you know, as if they'd lost a man. There were still 11 players on each team. That's still a game to win there. You're at home. And he seemed to suggest that, you know, the idea of them winning a game in those circumstances, I think it was 1-1 at the time as well, was ridiculous. And
he's been fairly consistent with that. He's pointed the finger at decisions over and over again, which to me is the hallmark of a floundering sort of manager. But what about
Liverpool?
They have
had some stinkers. They have had some stinkers, though, to be fair. The decisions that went against them.
But I mean, they've not...
More than any other side.
The problem Mourinho had was he had the problem with the goal being scored in added time in the first half, and then the problem with the Lucas Leiva thing. He had a few different fouls that he could have got sent off for. And I think he was probably saying that in context of the Matic thing against West Ham. Sometimes you feel like saying, well, look, use that to your advantage then, because that's what you used to do in the past. If things went against a Mourinho side in the past, He wouldn't necessarily only rant about it in public. He would go back to the team behind the scenes and say, look at it, everyone's against us. Look at it. No one wants to give us a chance.
Yeah, we are too. we're against you as well.
And now he either doesn't seem to want to do that or he can't do that.
Absolutely.
But at the risk of turning this into a massive Chelsea fest, Liverpool were good.
Well, I was about to say that Pete, you enjoyed Jurgen Klopp's performance on the touchline.
I did. He was remonstrating with a fan. Yeah. It was loads of fun, wasn't it? I think a Chelsea fan told him to calm down. And he went, No, I'm not going to calm down.
Down.
I'm or the either, manager. Yes, I will calm down.
I'm a manager of one of the biggest clubs in the country. We're
anything.
Winning away to the champions.
If anything,
calm down.
I'm going to calm up.
He's the first viral manager. Everything he does is kind of like, you know,
gleamable. Isn't it the last thing you want if you're Mourinho, though? Charismatic, brand new, not browbeating manager.
He's beaten you loads of times.
Yeah, he's got
and,
a great
and really likeable.
There's a video of him in midweek. I think it was misplaced a pass in training, and Klopp handed him his glasses to go, "Oh, you missed the pass." So that's on the Daily Mail website. That's you know, £100 a piece for a staff writer to get for that. So it's just he's making work for people, loving it.
I enjoy it. I think that's a great example of that German humour I've heard so much about.
That's a dig.
No, it's not. I love the Germans.
Coutinho, eh?
Yeah.
What an afternoon he had, Jim.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah.
He was tricky and jinky and all the other E's that we like in football.
I like the way that Klopp seemed to adapt and say, look, I haven't got Sturridge, Benteke is not fully fit. It's probably a bit too much to ask Origi to lead the line at Stamford Bridge, even though Chelsea are in bad shape. So I'm going to change it up a bit and play with no strikers, essentially.
He's still got to experiment, hasn't he, with what his squad can do and where they'll fit. I love how Coutinho is one of those players where... he scores the same type of goal over and over again. It's like he's got a special move. I love it.
He loves a curler.
He's a bit like Robin in that respect. You know what he's going to do, but it's very hard to stop him doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that Klopp used his substitutions very well as well. Mm. He noticed that Milner wasn't having a great time of it, so he changed it up. Benteke could give him whatever it was, 40 minutes or whatever.
While the whole time Mourinho's going, but he's changing players. That's not fair. What? We can't be expected to work in these conditions.
Well, that was the weird thing about the commentary team for the English BT Sport. They just kept on going on. About, well, I don't know why Klopp's not playing a striker, because he hasn't got any and Benteke's injured. He doesn't want to risk him, for crying out loud.
I liked also the difference between BT Sport and the good folk at the BBC was that the BT Sport interview in the post-match couldn't get anything out of Mourinho. Big guy Mowbray, consummate pro to the end, goes straight in there, beeline for Mourinho. Very open, exploratory question that Mourinho couldn't flat bat, and all of a sudden we were away.
And Mourinho even left the interview and then stopped to finish off a question.
Mowbray's a pro. He's so underrated, guy Mowbray. He's a really good interviewer.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
We like a bit of Mowbray. But it's Liverpool. It's Klopp's real big first scalp, although... You know, in the circumstances, you might say Chelsea isn't a big scout, but it is, and it's still going away to the champions, and that'll serve him very well indeed. More Premier League chat after this. So good, very good, very good, so good.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Oh, yeah. South Coast Derby happened. Southampton 2, Bournemouth 0. Wanyama sent off for some reckless behaviour.
It was very reckless, wasn't it?
My goodness, too.
There was not a wreck in sight.
They were both bookables.
Yeah, oh, for sure. It was the sort of thing you put on a training video to new referees. Yeah. This is how you send off a player for two yellow cards.
This is an easy one.
This is fundamentally a crime.
Believe it or not, actual professional footballers will make these types of decisions.
Well, the second one was almost a straight red, though, wasn't it?
Oh, my
God.
It was busy.
It was busy.
I think it was one of those ones where the ref has probably thought to himself, I'm glad he's already booked. Because if it's a straight red, which it could have been, some people might have said, oh, come on, that was like an orange card, or it was only just a yellow, and he's thinking, yeah, I can just give the second yellow.
If he'd have had three legs, he would have put that in as well.
That's right. We're all agreed here. Off you go. Davis and Pella gave Bournemouth the old 1-2, didn't they?
Pella's goal was a lot to like about that goal. Mm. Big, bustling, powerful centre-forward play.
Mm. Yeah.
He's essentially decided when he's made the run into the box and the ball comes across that he's essentially decided he's going to behave like the defender isn't even there. You know, just smash through the back of him and nut it in. It was a great goal. It was a great forward serve.
He's a top striker, Pella, and I'm glad that he's having a good season, as I'm sure Southampton fans are.
Great hair as well.
Wonderful.
Love his hair.
The great thing about his hair, it's not just his hair, it's the fact that his hair makes him look like he won't fancy it, but he does really fancy it.
Absolutely.
Which I like about
it. Ronaldo-esque, isn't it?
It's very much so. But there was a great bit in the commentary, the co-commentary provided by the great Niall Quinn. When less than 24 hours after the World Cup, Rugby World Cup final, which New Zealand obviously won, Pella went over to the New Zealand member of staff and did a haka with it as a celebration. Niall Quinn went, I don't know what he's doing there. I think it's some sort of ballroom dancing celebration.
Never invite Niall Quinn on a Strictly. He'll have a terrible time.
In my head, Niall Quinn only co-commentates on Sunderland games.
That game he did. The Weir Tyne Derby he did that time, about 6 months after he stopped being chairman of Sunderland, was absolutely... Sunderland won, of course. It was absolutely amazing. I think we said at the time he sounded like he was wearing a Hawaiian shirt and had a cigar in his hand.
Pina colada.
That's right. But Bournemouth did show a bit in the second half, and I felt a bit sorry for Eddie Howe, because I did tweet at the time saying that Burnley showed us last season that if you've got work right and nothing else, you're still going to get relegated in the Premier League.
Yeah.
But to be fair to Bournemouth, they've lost key players for injury, and they're not for want of trying. And they probably made it, I would call, an even game in the second half, but the damage is already done.
That's the problem, though, isn't it? If you can only sort of get into that rhythm when, anything you get out of it is a bonus, it's just not enough.
I didn't think they looked disorganised, though, which I think a lot of sides, when they come up, do. I think Watford at times have kind of flattered to deceive, but I think they looked all right at times, and I think they might be all right, you know.
Michael Cox was saying that he sees Bournemouth as a team who are defending like a championship team. And I don't know what he means by that. Possibly he means that maybe Premier League forwards make much more intelligent runs and stuff, and so it's difficult to pick up.
Yeah, it's understandable what he's saying there. But
I think, you know, we've made the point on the show before, but I think it's worth reiterating after that game. Bournemouth have come up from a league where they frankly stormed it, so they're on the front foot all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're sticking to a style of play that they've learned in a much tougher division, where they're having a style of play similar to what they play imposed on them, and they're just finding they can't really do much about it.
Yeah.
And it just looks a little bit beyond them. And I hope they can pull it together and stay up. But as you touched on, Luke, like, those injuries are... It's really bad, because they've lost two or three players for the whole season, and early on, that's a nightmare.
Their 12th man is tiny as well.
They've lost Wilson, Mings, and one other key player who escapes me at the moment.
Max Gradle.
Yeah. So essentially, forward midfield defender is difficult.
A bit. Bournemouth's hope is in Eddie Howe, as it always has been.
But also, Artur Boras won't stay off the source, will he?
Well, bloody Nora.
But I think Federici was all over the place. Sorry to cut him, but Federici, there was what he did two punches where there was no one around him and the ball was about chest height.
Yeah.
Just doesn't inspire confidence.
Display some aggression.
Come on!
I think with Eddie Howe, you just... Because he's such a tactician and obviously well-read and well-planned and all the rest of it, Bournemouth are just really hoping that he figures out the Premier League. Obviously, he's only got so much at his disposal. Mm. But if he can just about figure it out, then they may be okay. I mean, it's the fourth defeat in five for Bournemouth. Although they're still not in the bottom three, are they, Pete?
No. Propping it up. The foundation of the Premier League very much in the northeast hands.
Ronald Koeman, going back to Southampton, said the first 45 minutes was the best football so far this season, presumably about his own team season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah. I think that's the... I've not seen them every game of theirs, but that's the best I've seen them play.
They did.
They were very good against Chelsea, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Virgil van Dijk deserves a lot of credit as well.
Just for the name.
He's been for that alone, but also because he's been fantastic. He looks so steady. I mean,
what do you think of his hair game?
I'm enjoying it. Hair game strong.
Yeah.
God bless you, Mary.
But yeah, I just think coming from the SPL, it is a different
Scottish Premiership
kettle of fish.
Well, yeah, it's a similar standard.
Is it?
Transferable skills all round.
Yeah.
West Brom, they lost at home 2-3 to Leicester City. Pulis wasn't happy with the referee. Oh, no.
Or with Ranieri.
Yeah.
And Nigel Pearson did all the hard work.
With anybody, by the look of his face.
This is probably the best, most patronising moment of the entire season for Tony Pulis. I've never heard it, but I think the referee was Anthony Taylor.
Yeah.
And Pulis said, he talked about some of the decisions, because they should have had two or three penalties, I believe.
Yeah.
From memory. And when Tony Pulis was asked about that, he said, well, I'd like to see Mike have a word with Anthony about that. Talking about Mike Riley, the head of the referees.
Amazing. Wow.
I'd like to see Mike have a word with Anthony about that. You're the gaffer, like you're their dad or something.
Yeah, that's menacing, that is. Yeah. He said about the referee, I've had a little bit of a go at him in the tunnel. You didn't have a little bit of a go, did you?
Yeah.
But he did. I apologise for doing that.
Moving back to the BT Sport coverage here in the UK. It's nice that I think that's a positive step that they've got a referee on call to judge any decisions. I mean, you'd hope that some of the commentators
Howard
would
Webb.
Know the rules. Howard Webb does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
You'd hope that some of the commentators would have some idea about the rules of the game, but frequently they don't. That's the problem.
He made some interesting points about the minimum of time at the end of the first half in the Chelsea-Liverpool game.
Mm.
There's a lot of controversy around that, but his take on it was actually quite refreshing. He was talking about how, like, you know, it's a minimum of 2 minutes.
Mm.
So the referee technically can add more on, but there needs to be a reason for that. I think that's what he was saying. Mm. There needs to be a substitution or a goal or something. There wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So he was saying, the reason I found that quite refreshing is because I would have expected him to defend the referee to the hilt, and he didn't actually do that.
Yeah. Mm.
So there was actually a reason for him to be there.
That's right. Vardy and Mahrez cannot be contained.
No.
They're unbelievable, those two, at the moment.
Vardy is, I mean, I really enjoy what Gary Neville said about Vardy a few weeks ago, where he said he doesn't give his teammates a choice but to work hard behind him because he works so hard.
Yeah, that's nice, that.
And I think it's sometimes it's actually remarkable how much work he gets through. I mean, he really, when he gets, because if you think of like Ruud van Nistelrooy, who's the only player, I mean, I know there's been a couple who've scored 8 in a row, but Ruud van Nistelrooy is the only player to score more than that in a row in the Premier League.
Right.
I think he got 10. Mm. And if you think of van Nistelrooy as the last of the poachers, really. I mean, the game's moved on a bit now. You don't really see poachers that much anymore. And I'd say Van Nistelrooy was probably the most high-profile last of those.
Yeah.
Mm. You can sort of, I don't want to take anything away from Van Nistelrooy, but the point I'm trying to make is that sometimes he'll get goals just by being in the right position.
Of course. Yeah.
Whereas you get the impression with Vardy, he's earned every single
one. Oh, my goodness, yeah. He's blazing through every available position until the right one comes up.
He sweated embryos for every single one of those goals, you know.
But you're true. He's such a workhorse. And actually, it's interesting what you say there about, or what Gary Neville said about him working hard and it filters down to the rest of the team. Perhaps the ultimate example of that was Samuel Eto'o at Barcelona.
Mm.
He used to press so much and close down and work his socks off that obviously Guardiola would have certainly played his part in the style that they played, but he would have a go at people, say, why are you not working hard and so on. And when you've got someone like that, you know, defending from the front, really.
Yeah. If you're a centre-back playing up against someone like Vardy, even if you're pacey yourself, you still know you're not going to get a moment's peace. And that must be so mentally draining from start to finish. It's no coincidence that, given that Vardy and one or two others have got the fitness, it's no coincidence that Leicester keep going behind and keep coming back. Mm. I think they've got 10 points from losing positions this season, which is the most in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
And that is surely down to the sort of mental stress but the defenders are put under from someone like Vardy, just those channels just tirelessly over and over again. He's got a bit of the Ian Wright about him, actually.
Mm. Yeah.
Actually, he's also got a bit of the Michael Owen about him as well.
Yeah.
That goal he scored at the weekend was very Owen-esque.
Yeah. Nice to see Ricky Lambert with a rare West Brom goal.
Yes. Mm.
But it was just a consolation.
He takes a good pen, does Ricky Lambert.
That's right. Speaking of rare goals, Joel bloody Campbell.
We slated him on Friday, Jim.
I was saying he was the answer. That's what I said. And he comes in the side and they win 3-0 comprehensively away to Swansea.
He was man of the match as well.
He was fantastic. He did everything he has to do. I mean, the challenge for him now is to make himself someone like Francis Coquelin or Hector Bellerin.
Not Francis Jeffers.
No, absolutely not, yeah. Who just forces themselves to be an integral part of that first team squad, and you know, there's a lot of injuries at the moment, and that is such an encouraging performance from him on the right hand side. He just works so tirelessly. He loves a shot.
Yep.
But you know, Arsenal have cried out for that for a long time, haven't they? It might actually work.
There's
in
nothing
our
wrong with being a bit more direct.
Takes a pop a little bit.
No, well, we're just talking
gives
about
something different in the front.
Of course, we're talking about Vardy working hard and scrapping away and all the rest of it. If Campbell can do that every time he comes on, it's always handy. Arsenal won their last 5 league games since that defeat away to Chelsea.
It was important to bounce back after midweek as well.
Yeah, away to Sheffield Wednesday. Yeah.
Daft results have come in Europe and in the Cup.
Which is progress, right? Really, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you can isolate that problem, compartmentalise it. Yeah,
just focus on one competition a season, which maybe we have.
Normally they're sort of scattered across.
Yeah.
So.
Key moments.
Yeah. Are you getting a little bit giddy, Jim? Do you think?
Well, I'm enjoying it.
Because you think about Chelsea at the moment, Manchester United.
Yeah.
Right. Manchester United, you know. Arsenal, I mean, they're up there.
Well, they absolutely are up there.
Remember, whatever you say won't have an impact on what will actually happen.
No, I'm fully aware of that. I mean, this has been a tough fixture for Arsenal traditionally as well. So mentally, winning this comprehensively is a huge thing. Mm. So that's it's just a very, very important result. Like, we drop points in silly fixtures a lot. And, Swansea are a decent side. And beating 3-0 away is great. And a bit of controversy on the second goal. But play to the whistle, Swansea.
Yeah.
Like, it's completely, really,
yeah, completely.
You can't, simple.
You can't have any complaints about that, I don't think.
No complaints. Everton had a nice time against Sunderland.
They did, didn't
and,
they?
As does everybody, really.
Apart from Newcastle.
Kone became the fifth Ivorian to score a Premier League hat-trick. Didier Drogba, of course, Solomon Kalou, Yaya Toure, and Luke.
Aruna Dindan?
Yes.
There we are. The deaf man Zinedine Zidane?
That's right, yeah.
I mean, Everton were superb, weren't they? It was the perfect execution of the football that Martinez wants to play. And they've often been quite blunt up front, as Wigan were when he was in charge, and it's not always clicked. But that was everything just clicking into gear perfectly. Kone's second goal was like one of the best worked goals I've seen this season. It was absolutely fantastic.
It was a perfect hat-trick he scored, wasn't it?
I think
I might have heard Robbie Earle call it a gentleman's hat trick.
I like that.
I'm not sure what's gentlemanly about it, but
the ball for it is from Lukaku. Side of the left.
Yeah, De La Feo actually run the show. He was fantastic.
Well, De La Feo with a goal, a dive, and a lovely assist.
That's a terrible dive.
Stop with a dive in. He does that a lot.
He ran the show, including the halftime entertainment, which happened when he was on the pitch.
That's right. Yeah, we've already highlighted two lovely assists from Lukaku and De La Feo, just gorgeous, and they were having a wonderful
time.
They
really were. I mean, it must be absolutely maddening to be a Sunderland fan, because
they look better going forward.
Yeah. But even when they came back from 2-0 down, they displayed absolutely no fight. Like when the Coates own goal went in, their heads dropped completely. And from the post-match reaction, you get the impression that Sam Allardyce, like, it can't really fathom quite how bad they are. Yeah. But it looks like it's so much worse than he thought it would be.
Well, if I'd have known this, I'd have done something else.
Well, I'd have waited for the Chelsea job.
I mean, that goal was always going to go in if he missed that. But I think getting an own goal is just, again.
Yeah, it's more confidence thing, isn't it? I've got some, if there are any Sunderland fans listening, which I'm sure there are, I've got a bit of a consolation for them here. Sunderland have conceded 25 goals already, so they carry on at this rate, they're going to concede just over 80 goals this season. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Something to think about. Yeah.
Peter Reid's premier passions has been repeated on BBC. It's not really, but it should be.
don't bring Peter Reid into it.
Gareth Barry made his 573rd Premier League appearance. Mm.
Third highest ever, is it?
Yeah, only Frank Lampard and Ryan Giggs have more.
Yeah.
Marvellous.
Is that outfield players, though?
That's overall. He took over
really?
David James, yeah.
Is it really? Wow.
I think James was 572.
Was it? Okay.
Ticking away.
Before we leave the Premier League, Remy Gard has been confirmed as Aston Villa manager.
Yeah.
Yes, he has.
I don't know too much about. I obviously remember him as a player.
As Arsenal. He wasn't in league with Arsenal, I think. In 98?
He was Arsene Wenger's first signing.
Was he? Okay.
Ooh, that's lovely.
Pretty sure he was in the squad in 98 when they won the league.
He would have been, yeah.
He's been touted for every single kind of job in the last year or something.
I don't know an awful lot about him. Obviously, he managed Lyon for a while, they won the cup with him. But he left about 18 months ago for what was personal reasons. He's a bit ahead of his time with the older managers taking a break type thing.
Yeah.
But I wonder if he might be a fairly decent fit for Villa. I mean, Lyon are a fairly sort of nouveau riche club, but they won like seven titles in a row, didn't they? Around the turn of the century. But they're still a fairly big club, I guess.
Oh, yeah, they are.
And Villa are also that. Yeah. And also, the two other points I wanted to make is there's a few young French players in the squad at Villa, and there's some other French-speaking players also. But the main thing is, I think Gard is very hungry to get back into football. And I think that is a real... You can't underestimate that. He's been out of the game for 18 months. He's got a chance here to do something decent with a big club in England. I think he won't be for want of trying if he's not successful.
Absolutely. Well, I'm kind of enjoying this manager's gap year thing. Yeah. Do you think they're all just travelling? just finding themselves.
Go to Thailand.
They're on a motorbike over.
I was
going to
say Phil Brown's probably travelling. Goodness knows. Let's go to the Championship. Last week there was lots of derbies. Of course, we've already mentioned the South Coast derby. There was a West Midlands derby. Mm-hmm. Birmingham they lost though at home 2-0 to Wolves. They're still in the playoff positions though. Slightly surprising. Well, there was a West London derby. Brentford beat QPR 1-0. The three West London clubs in the Championship occupy 10th, 11th and 12th.
Mm. Spooky.
It's a straight shootout.
Yeah. The Halloween spook fest.
I know. Fulham got a 4-1 away win.
Yeah, and they've got another Moussa Dembélé, haven't they?
They do.
They've signed a different player called Moussa Dembélé, which I didn't
know. He came for the youth kit. He came for the youth academy. Yeah,
Like for like, Jim.
They were both there at the same time, him and the other
really?
One. Yeah, they were both there at the same time.
I think Fulham's youth academy is meant to be rather good.
Did you see the Wolves-Birmingham game?
I didn't see it, no.
By far the better team, and they've parachuted in Grant Holt, who didn't start, and also Mike Williamson, just shoring it up.
Just, I think he's got like a month's loan.
Don't it always seem to go?
Yeah. But Pete, with the Mike Williamson thing, why have they let him go, given that like Coloccini's been sort of way off the pace and they're struggling in that area? It's got Premier League experience though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not good for him.
Maybe in a season where it was terrible. To be fair, he's had flashes. He had, I think last season, the first 10 matches or something, he was imperious. He was incredible. It was incredible. But
can I just say, if there's any area of the pitch that you don't want flashes, it's probably central defence.
Hot flashes.
I'll take 7 out of 10 every game,
In the Birmingham Wolves match, I'm of advancing years, rapidly getting older, but there's nothing that excites me more than having a player called Donaldson on the pitch.
Yeah.
Because I know it's pathetic, and I know I'm growing up and stuff, but I still get excited because Birmingham have got Donaldson up.
Imagine Jay Campbell scoring for your club.
It's not the only thing that's pathetic.
No, in my life, you're right. You're quite right.
We don't have time to cover all that. Chris Hughton and Brighton, though, they're still on top, but Steve Bruce and Sean Dyche are hot on his heels.
Mm. Only team unbeaten in England, aren't they, Brighton?
Yeah, they are.
You don't need to be hot on Brighton's heels. They'll muff it up. They're not good.
Is Steve Bruce ever hot on someone's heels?
Only at a wedding.
Only if he's spilling his dinner down him.
That's mean.
What? That's very mean.
What? Everyone's got to have dinner.
The greatest thing.
Yeah.
The greatest
thing. Some of us need two.
Well, only one dinner, isn't it?
That's a bruising bonus.
The greatest English player to never win an England cap. We shouldn't be derided like that.
He got 19 goals in a Premier League season once. He did take the penalties, but a lot of strikers would be happy with that. It's outrageous.
Can I just say, every striker would be happy with that, apart from Messi and Ronaldo. Yeah. Every striker would be happy with that.
Paul Clement started well in his first season in charge of Derby, and first season's number one.
He didn't actually start that well.
Okay, sorry.
They turned it around, didn't they? Because I remember them, I saw them on TV at Fratton Park against Portsmouth in the League Cup, and Portsmouth beat them, and Derby were awful.
Yeah. Mm.
And they went, from memory, they had a lot of draws at the start of the season, but then now, Paul Clement seems to be like a man who asks a team to take on a lot of ideas, and it maybe takes him a while to settle in, because he's come from that coaching background at a high level.
PSG and Real Madrid.
Yeah, and that makes sort of sense that they're starting to get it now. And also, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying they got Chris Martin back, who's a massive player for them.
Yeah, that's true. Before we leave England, in League Two, Richard Money, Dickie Dosh has been sacked.
Yeah.
Shame, isn't it, really?
Or is it
for us?
For us only.
For us, yeah. Because his name's Dick Money.
Basically.
And that's literally the only reason.
That is, isn't it, really? Well, Chelsea job.
I thought the statement that Cambridge put out was a little bit of a dig at Dickie Dodge as well. Because you fired the guy, let him have a bit of dignity. They said something like, to be honest, the results over the last 9 months have been terrible.
You could have just said this season.
Yeah,
his name's making us sound silly.
Yeah.
The man got them back into the Football League and he won them the FA Trophy, I think, in the same season. Yeah. He deserves to have his name
He'll get
on
another crack of the whip somewhere else.
Yeah, but he has been poor this season. I think they're 18th in League Two. Hang on a minute. Let's go to the Scottish Premiership. It's about time. Celtic beat Aberdeen 3-1. The boys go 7 points above the Dons. And Celtic will feel they've put Aberdeen in their place with that comprehensive win.
Yeah.
The Dandy Dons are my sort of Scottish team, as we all know. And they've done a real Pompey thing here where they started off well and lured us all into a false sense of security. Then they went on about five or six games where they just cannot buy a win.
Mm. Yeah.
I think they've lost four out of the last five.
It's a shame because I think a lot of people in Aberdeen, certainly Derek McInnes, thought that they actually had... could have a title push. I mean, 7 points off. But
it's the momentum, though. The momentum is so poor now.
Celtic will probably feel that they've put them away. I mean, if you're looking for somebody to challenge Celtic, I mean, you've got to go to Celtic Park and get a result, obviously.
Yeah.
A clean sheet at Celtic Park is good for anybody. I mean, even sides in Europe have often struggled to go there. So you've got to think about that. And then who's closest to them to the league in second? Well, it all points to the magnificent goalkeeper boys.
They had a great win at the
three
weekend.
Wins in a row. They're back in it. Yeah. I mean, they're up to second. They're only 6 points away from Celtic.
Sometimes I can't begrudge you a mention of them because they won 4. Did they win 4-0 away?
They did against Partick. I mean, we all woke up for a minute and now we've fallen asleep. And to dream again is a wonderful thing.
I think if and when Celtic win the title this year, it'll be their fifth in a row, won't it? And if and when Rangers get back up, there's no guarantee they're actually going to be any good.
Celtic, so
they could just keep going for ages and ages and get 10 in a row.
Imagine the Rangers went straight back down.
Well, Rangers, Hibs beat Rangers ending their winning streak.
I was listening to the BBC the other day and they were talking and they did the Scottish football update on one of the evening shows they did on the Five Live, and they got the Scottish correspondent to talk about Ronnie Daler, who went on a bit of a rant the other day.
He's the luckiest man in football,
in his rant, he sort of talked about, I think he talked about the authorities or some refereeing, and then for no reason, I think I'm right in saying, he went on a bit of a rant about Rangers. And the Scottish correspondent said, now you're a Celtic manager, my son. Finally, you're now a Celtic manager.
Yeah. He could just flick autopilot and they'd win the league probably most seasons. But he's made them...
He just pokes his head in once a week.
Yeah, good. All right. Yeah. But they're not particularly good in Europe at the minute, Celtic, whereas previously they were. And so he's got to sort that out. We're going to talk about some European footballs after this little break.
While you're sitting at work punching them numbers into them boxes, why not head on over to thefootballramble.com and have a gander? You'll find more highlights than a night at Crystals.
Welcome back, everybody. It's now time for me to say, this Friday, why don't you get your ears around our Premier League preview show sponsored by Bet365.
Yes, it's always good fun. I mean, we do a sort of a bet of the week, don't we? We choose an outcome, I guess, if you like. And last week it was Man City -2 against Norwich. Man City chose that game to be a huge letdown. I don't think any of us saw coming. But yeah, apart from that, it's all full of good chat.
Indeed it is.
It is indeed.
Bundesliga. The winning streak is over. Bayern Munich. They drew 0-0 away to Eintracht Frankfurt. I mean, well done, Frankfurt. Mm. Bloody well done. It's not easy, that, but it was 0-0.
That was a record-breaking start for Bayern Munich.
I worry that they're just going to take that out on Arsenal.
Indeed. Another derby in Italy this time. Juventus 2, Torino 1. Paul Pogba with a peach.
He did that brilliant thing of celebrating by looking angrier than he would have done had he missed and got sent off and injured.
Like Rooney did against Newcastle in that famous volley.
Oh, the classic Kets Bayer. That's the benchmark.
Advertising boarding mark.
Cesare Bovo, I think it's Bovo how you pronounce it, his equaliser was an absolute rasper. And it was his first in Serie A since May 2011. I'm pretty sure he took the free kick and then it came back off the wall and then he hit it. Why is a man who hasn't scored since May 2011 hitting the free kick? It's absolutely outrageous. Buffon made the save of the season for me in that game. Absolutely ridiculous. And then Juan Cuadrado slid in the winner deep into injury
time. Chelsea Hall of Famer.
That's right, yeah.
Wasn't this the week that they said that, I think 3 days before the weekend of football, they said that Joe Hart took over Buffon as the world's greatest goalkeeper?
Briefly.
Wow. And then he had a stinker.
Oh, dearie me. Nice to see Gary Medel with a lovely 25-yarder.
Yeah.
His first goal for Inter. They beat Roma 1-0.
He sort of bludgeons his goals in, doesn't he? There's nothing dexterous about his goals.
It was not. It was a daisy cutter. It was a lovely one.
Yeah.
Pjanic sent off. He's been brilliant for Roma this season. Quite strange. Inter in second, Roma third, Fiorentina atop. It's shaping up quite nicely in Serie A, I think. But could we have a little push from Milan?
Yeah.
They're flipping 1-3-1 away to Lazio. Mihailovic against his old club.
I've got a great fact that about that game. I researched it myself, so it's probably wrong.
Do it.
is that Donnarumma played in goal for Milan again. He started in goal, 16 years old.
Yeah.
Miroslav Klose, who started up front for Lazio, had made his debut in top flight football before Donnarumma was born.
My goodness.
Yeah, how amazing is that?
That's ridiculous. Nice to see Mexis among the goals. Always nice to see that man.
It was a weekend, thinking about that, it was a weekend for angry celebration. He was very, I mean, he's a very angry man anyway.
He is.
He's the only one that can make like an overhead kick look like an act of violence. I mean, it's normally an act of amazing beauty.
What a goal that was, though.
It was.
Carlos Bacca got another one. He's doing right.
He went around the keeper, didn't he?
He did. I think he got five or six this season.
It was actually Mexis's first touch. Like, you've got no right to be that furious if you've been on like a minute.
Fired off. Right? I've had three Lucas heads. I'm going to kick off.
Milan are up to six. They're 5 points off the top. It'd be nice to see them back amongst the top teams in
really
Italy.
Would.
Although Gary Monk.
I'm sure lots of people wouldn't think that. Right then, let's go to Turkey. This is a strange story. Some of you may have seen this. The president of Trabzonspor apparently gave an order to security guards to lock four match officials in their stadium because they didn't award his team a late penalty.
So far, so normal. Carry on.
I can't see that being a problem with the authorities.
Please continue. Standards have to be met.
The match officials were locked in until 4 a.m. after the evening kickoff and were due to be there until the president...
They're going to make last orders now. Who else will keep us in?
Well, they get first orders because they were there. It's meant to be there until the morning. I say meant as loosely as possible because the club president, he was going to arrive and presumably give them a ticking off. He basically said, keep them at the stadium until I get there tomorrow morning.
Oh, my goodness.
He stitched the imprisoned them.
He's, yeah. Oh, yeah. He stitched the security guard. Right up there, hasn't he? Yeah. Presumably. Yeah.
Sorry.
The reason.
We've got to imprison you. Yeah.
Can we go home? Yeah. I mean, we haven't done anything wrong here.
I mean, how scary must the guy be that as a security guard you actually do that? I
suppose you're on double time after a second. Yeah.
The reason they were freed at 4 a.m. was due to a call from the president of Turkey.
In the middle of elections as well. It's election season there as well.
Giddy aunt. The officials left under an escort from special forces. That's a waste of flipping the public purse.
Send him the bill.
Yeah. Well, the Trabzonspor president said, a very important person called me and asked me not to cause embarrassment in Turkey and around the world. Bit late.
Past 3 a.m.
But also, I love this. I absolutely love this. Right? Obviously, the important person was the president of the country. The president's had to call you to rein you in. And then he goes on to say, but he promised the penalty incident would be investigated. There's no moral high ground. Yeah.
How on earth have those
officials... I'll get my way.
How have those officials got to the president?
I know.
That's outstanding.
Well, this is unbelievable. He also...
Jose Mourinho's taking notes.
Yeah.
Give me Cameron. I want Cameron.
Well, he caused further outrage saying about the incident, if we're going to die, we'll die like men. We won't live like women. Yeah, I mean, it's just, why do all these guys, right, they've done ridiculous things. They have to throw a bit of sexism, homophobia.
Was it the male toilets? That's what we've got to ask ourselves.
It's always the same. They're never just happy with that. Well, and while I'm at it, I'm going to be racist as well, or whatever they might do. Yeah.
Just referees getting Tic Tacs out of a condom machine for such.
Yeah. There's only one box left. I've no change of a tenner.
get me a Menhancer, will you? Yeah.
Get me a chewable toothbrush.
It's just
get me a vibrating willy ring.
Get me out. So there we are. Now it's time for the highlights of the week with Luke Moore.
Hi everyone, highlights of the week time. It's a special themed one this week. I wonder if you can guess what it is. Alistair Norman's been in touch saying, I cannot comment on my highlight of the week at this time. I have no comment to make. Chris J. Burnham says, I have nothing to say.
Yeah, good.
Faisal Bin Jamil says, FA will charge me if I answer, why don't you answer? John Doyle says, I have nothing to say. And Andy Malone says, nothing.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Good.
Wonderful.
That's the highlights of the week this week.
I like that. My highlight of the week. Actually, I've got two highlights. Carlos Tevez won the championship with Boca.
Yeah, so was he celebrating on top of the goal?
Probably.
I think he climbed up onto the top of the goal and was on the crossbar mucking about.
Using it like a hammock.
In a way, yeah. In a way. Although he didn't look like he was in any mood for sleeping.
In a way.
Well, they've won 11 out of 14 games since he returned, so an immediate impact.
They absolutely love him around that neck of the woods. They love him.
So they should.
I mean, I think that's part of the reason that Juventus have been... You know, they lost Vidal and Tevez. That's huge.
And Pirlo as well. I know Pirlo was...
Have they also lost Llorente?
I think possibly. They might have done. Yeah, but he didn't play that much.
Okay.
You know. But also the other highlight was the Barcelona players interrupting a Getafe press conference.
Oh, that was weird. That was the most arrogant thing I think I've ever seen.
It was an accident though, wasn't it?
They thought it was Luis Enrique and a handful of the players were going to go in and scare him.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was they just did it on purpose.
Piqué immediately apologised and said they'd made a mistake. They looked like absolute idiots.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
But if you actually watch the video, they run in the room going, and all of a sudden they all sort of go... And they all look around and then go to walk out the way they came in, but for some reason that wasn't possible. And then they walked with their masked heads face down out past the press.
It's not spinning the World Cup. It's not the Spanish conga line from the World Cup, is it? No.
They've got previous for the Spanish, haven't they?
I thought they'd literally gone to Getafe at their own ground, beaten them, and then... taking a piss out of them in their press conference.
No.
They did do that, Luke,
but it apparently wasn't intentional. Yeah.
What a contrast to the atmosphere it must be like at Chelsea after a game.
Indeed. Have we got a website roundup?
We have, yeah. Let's have a look. Kelly Wells, the always excellent Kelly Wells, says... Most of last week was taken up with working out and then recoiling in terror at our Tokyo sex well names. I don't know if you guys saw this, but there was like a smart upload of the generator online. You could put your name in and it'd give you one, which you can still see on our site, apparently. And the always excellent Dublin Oral Oyster is hers. Did have time to do some work. She says, a Valenciennes player making Kieran Dyer and Lee Bowyer's pitch-based punch-up look like an engagement party. I recommend you watch that.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Mick McCarthy having a Saipan flashback. second mention for Mick McCarthy. He's not even doing much in the game at the moment. Coverage of the Capital One Cup featuring Professor Yaffel and Paul Mercer making a salient point. And why, despite all the evidence to the contrary, Roman Abramovich should give Jose more time. And that's from Kelly, at Kelly_Wells. Wells with an E. On thefootballramble.com.
There we are. Well, if you want to get in touch, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com. The website, of course, is thefootballramble.com. We're on Twitter, @FootballRamble, Instagram, and FaceyB.
Yes, we are.
There we are. That's it. Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye, everyone.
It's goodbye from me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.